The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
History tells the story of the world and of our lives. Sometimes that history goes bump in the night. Broadcasting from the Center of Oddity and the Supernatural in Central Florida, it's the History Goes Bump podcast.
Hello, you spooktacular people. Welcome to this 534th episode of the History Goes Bump podcast. Ghost tours for the theater of the mind. I'm your host, Diane.
And this is Kelly.
Kelly, on this episode, we have another haunted cemeteries. This is number 29.
Love it.
On this episode, we're going to feature cemeteries from six different states. Kelly, you and I just started watching 6 Feet Under because they dropped the series on Netflix. I know it's been out there for years and years and years, but we've really been enjoying it.
Yes, we have.
And one of the recent episodes, I think it was the final episode in season one, the really annoying woman who's on there that's always bothering David, her aunt died. And she was really close to her aunt. She said it was the only one who ever loved her. And she looks up at Nate, who is one of the funeral directors, and she says, "Why do we die?" And I really loved what Nate had to say back to her, because you could come up with some kind of theological thing about, well, we're fallen and everybody sins and so everybody's got to die.
Sure. Or,
well, it's just, you know, one of those bad quirks about life. It's like taxes. You just got to do it or whatever. And he just basically said, because it gives the rest of your life meaning and purpose. You don't take every day for granted. You want to make it mean something because you only have so much.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I loved that. And of course, when we see cemeteries, we think the same thing. And I've always loved the statement that it's not about that birth date and that death date. It's that dash.
The dash in between.
Yeah, means something. So just love that. Before we get into sharing these haunted cemeteries, we want to welcome into the Spooktacular crew, Valentina, Lisa, Connie, Michael, Mary, Suzanne, Dirk, Kara with a K, Susan, and Leah.
Thank you so much for joining the Spooktacular crew.
And now, this moment in oddity.
Sometimes a disembodied hand is just a disembodied hand that may be looking for its body. Or maybe its thing from the Addams Family. Or perhaps it could be the representation of something that is lore with a touch of the historical, as it is at the Tower of London. The Tower of London is one of UNESCO's World Heritage Sites and is a historic castle located on the River Thames in London, England. Originally constructed as a defensive fortress, the tower is now an iconic landmark beckoning tourists from all over the world. The first building that visitors encounter here is Byward Tower. Prior to passing through its archway and hidden in plain view is a foggy brick of glass built right into one of the drum towers. Resting just behind the glass is a macabre sight, a human hand. Although it is artificial, it is enough to give some tourists the heebie-jeebies. Lore has it that due to the Byward Tower having been the main entry to the castle, visitors were required to place their hand within the hole and speak a password to gain entry. If the word uttered was incorrect, then the potential intruder would have their hand chopped off then and there. Although the yeoman warders who currently guard the castle are not sure of the hand's origin or purpose, the sight of a disembodied hand encased in the wall of a medieval castle certainly is odd.
I knew nothing but shadows, and I thought them to be real. Oscar Wilde, The Picture of Dorian Gray.
And now, This Month in History.
In the month of April, on the 25th, in 1915, 70,000 soldiers from the Allies landed at Gallipoli, marking the first major military action fought by Australian and New Zealand forces during World War I. Great Britain had declared war on Germany after it invaded Belgium in 1914, bringing their Commonwealth realms into the war. The objective of this military action was to drive through Istanbul and take out Turkey. This would allow Russia to get its supply lines through to help them fight Germany. The Allies weren't successful, and a stalemate resulted that lasted 8 months before the Allies withdrew. There were heavy casualties on both sides. 20,000 of those 70,000 troops were from the Australia and New Zealand Army Corps, also known as ANZAC. April 25th formally became ANZAC Day in 1916 to commemorate victims of war and recognize the role of armed forces for the countries. This was officially declared by the acting Australian Prime Minister George Pearce and carries on a tradition of courage, endurance, and mateship.
It wasn't until the 19th century that it occurred to people that cemeteries could make great parks. A movement carried over from France and swept the nation, and garden cemeteries were founded in every state. These became gathering places for family picnics and settings for long, peaceful walks enveloped in the shade of countless varieties of trees. Several of these cemeteries are not as peaceful as they could be, with spirits roaming about after dusk. In this episode, we share the history and hauntings of cemeteries in Kentucky, Missouri, Ohio, Mississippi, Indiana, and Colorado. First up, we have Cave Hill Cemetery.
Cave Hill Cemetery is located in, and of course we know I'm going to say this wrong because nobody can say this name right, Louisville, unless you live there, Kentucky. This is the largest cemetery in Louisville, and many claim that it is the most beautiful cemetery in Kentucky. This is a 296-acre burial ground located at 701 Baxter Avenue that is not only an arboretum, but it's the final resting place of Muhammad Ali and Colonel Sanders.
Awesome. I actually saw Muhammad Ali once.
Oh, that's right. You told me when you did a marathon or something.
Yeah, the LA Marathon. He shot the starting gun.
That's so cool.
I jogged right underneath him.
Neat. Cave Hill was chartered in 1848 on a rural property known as Cave Hill Farm. Garden cemeteries were the rage in the late Victorian era, and Louisville wanted their own, so they hired Edmund Francis Lee to lay out the design. There were lakes and ponds and hills and winding paths. Beargrass Creek runs through the middle and is fed from a cave for which the cemetery is named. And yes, you can kind of creep into it, but it doesn't go back very far, so it's not really that cool of a cave. There are 500 varieties of trees on the property, some of which have won awards.
Awesome.
William Johnston had owned the land, and his farmhouse that still stood on the property was turned into what was called a pest house. I hate that name. It's awful.
I know.
This was a place for people with contagious diseases to be locked away from the public. That was demolished in 1872 and replaced by Beechhurst Sanitarium that was open until 1936, when it too was demolished.
The Italian Renaissance Revival entrance and main gate was added in 1880. Another entrance was added on Baxter Avenue, and this featured Corinthian styling with a clock tower that held a 2,000-pound bell. Apparently, this got hit by lightning a lot, as it was the tallest structure around for years. There are over 120,000 interments.
That's a lot of bodies.
Yes, it is. Over 250 Confederate soldiers are buried, one of whom was Brigadier General Alpheus Baker. The founder of Louisville, George Rogers Clark, was buried here after being exhumed in 1869 from another cemetery. A friend of his, Judge John Rowan, said at his funeral, "The mighty oak of the forest has fallen, and now the scrub oaks sprout all around." Meriwether Lewis Clark, the grandson of the famous explorer, has his plot here.
I love how he has both their names in his name.
Yeah, it's cool.
Well-known burials here include the sisters who created the Happy Birthday song, Patty and Mildred Hill. The founder of Kentucky Fried Chicken, Colonel Harlan Sanders, died in 1980. He developed his secret recipe for breading chicken and cooking it in a pressure fryer in 1940 when he was 50 years old.
So it's never too late to do something that's going to make you world famous.
This is true. He was buried in his trademark white suit and black Western string tie. His second wife joined him at Cave Hill in 1996. One of the greatest American boxers of all time, Muhammad Ali, was buried at Cave Hill when he passed in 2016.
There are many unique memorials graced with sculptures. Sandra Twist, a mother of three kids, had once been a fashion model, and so an elegant statue graces her plot with a stone tablet sharing the story of her career. The grave of three-year-old Samantha Ann McDonald has a birdbath and a sculpture titled "Jesus is My Swing Set." Her likeness sits on a wooden plank suspended by ropes, and a rendition of Jesus stands behind her gripping the ropes. Little Samantha passed when she accidentally rode her trike into the family swimming pool and drowned. The lyrics to "Jesus Loves Me" are carved into stones on either side of the sculpture. It's a cute sculpture, but also a little creepy because Jesus is like just coming out of this weird arched kind of thing holding onto those ropes. We'll post some pictures on Instagram. Harry Leon Collins was known as the Frito-Lay magician because he'd been a salesman for the company and then became a full-time Frito-Lay Corporation magician. Who knew you could have a job as a corporate magician? His plot features him in a tuxedo with his cape tossed over a box, more than likely filled with props. The sculpture creeps people out a bit because of the hollow eyes. It's not haunted, but other areas of the cemetery have strange things happening. Dusk seems to bring the haunts out at Cave Hill. People claim that green orbs have been seen floating in the cemetery at night. A female apparition has been seen. No one knows who she is, but she tends to the graves of children. Disembodied whispers are heard, especially near the graves of Civil War soldiers. Next, we have Maple Park Cemetery.
Maple Park Cemetery is located at 300 West Grand Street in Springfield, Missouri. The burial ground was founded in 1876 after residents complained that the city cemetery, called Hazelwood, was too far outside of town to make it convenient to visit loved ones' final resting places. That cemetery was 4 miles from downtown Springfield at the time. Six businessmen heard the complaints and they formed an association that founded a not-for-profit cemetery. The cemetery was filled with maple tree plantings, and that is where the name originates. The land where the cemetery sits was owned by the Campbell family, and they had a fruit farm there along with a house. The property was originally 200 acres, and L.A. Campbell sold 30 acres to an agricultural association. This was used as a fairgrounds for a while, and then it was sold to the Cemetery Association. The most distinctive item in the graveyard is the historic gazebo. No one is sure what it dates to, but it is thought that it was part of the fairgrounds. This features an onion dome cupola, and designs near the roof featuring horseshoe shapes, a four-leaf clover, and cross designs. Visitors to the cemetery have claimed to see shadow figures, particularly near a mausoleum. Sometimes these figures have more detail to them, but when approached, they disappear. A little girl ghost has been seen playing amongst the tombstones. This is an intelligent haunting, as she is aware of people and her surroundings. The gazebo occasionally features music, and it's not because a band is playing there. Next up, we have Red Oak Presbyterian Cemetery.
Red Oak Presbyterian Church is a historic church in the old river town of Ripley, Ohio. The church isn't fancy, just a little knockabout place. Doesn't really look like a church. Interestingly, it has two separate doors on the front, and no one knows why. Theories include a door for women and one for men, or possibly one for whites and one for blacks. Being that this is an old church, so maybe there was some segregation going on in Ohio and that's what they were doing. One thing that gives away that this is a church is a cemetery behind it. The congregation was founded in 1798 and the building was constructed in 1817. The cemetery not only includes members from the church, but pioneers from the area. The most well-known person buried here is Rosa Washington Riles, who passed away in 1969. You may not recognize that name, but you probably recognize the name Aunt Jemima. She was a member of the church until she left town in her mid-30s to work as a cook for an executive from the Quaker Oats Company. The original Aunt Jemima had been Nancy Green, and when she passed in 1923, the company needed other women to take on the role. So Riles became Aunt Jemima in the 1950s. A pancake breakfast in honor of Riles is hosted every year by the church to raise funds to maintain the old cemetery. The church also paid for Riles' headstone. Can you imagine you can have pancakes in a cemetery?
I think that's wonderful.
And it benefits a cemetery. I just love it altogether. Make mine with chocolate chips.
The cemetery here is supposedly crazy haunted. Two log houses served as church buildings in the early years, but both burned down. The last one because it was hit by lightning. That lightning hit a tree in the cemetery, too. That killed the tree, at least for a little while. A few years later, it started to regrow. And then it was hit by lightning a second time.
That's not a lucky tree.
No. Just before the church had it cut down, it showed signs of life again. The church started calling this the Resurrection Tree. A person wrote of the cemetery, "It is one of the most eerie cemeteries I have ever visited. My son was 3 at the time and had no idea where we were. He just liked the headstones. But then there was this one day. He kept talking to someone and he started dancing on a headstone buried in the ground. I told him to stop and that we did not step on them. He said, 'But she did it.' I asked, 'Who did what?' He answered, 'The mom. WTF. I asked him to tell me what he was talking about. Who was he talking to? He said her name was Anna. Okay, I'll play along. Who is Anna and what is she telling you? He said, 'She said her mom did it and she's sad.' 'Her mom did what?' He said, 'She killed her. She killed all of them.' 'What?' He didn't even know what a cemetery was at that time. I started looking at the gravestone he was dancing on and it was a woman. There was also a 5-foot-tall monument with a lot of names and dates on it. One name was Anna. There were 5 or 6 other names and dates. They were all the children of that woman. All of them died before they were 5. They were born in the 1800s. Now, he couldn't read yet, nor did he know we were in a place where dead people were buried. Call it a coincidence, but I think that little girl told him that her mom killed her and all of her siblings. Creepy shizzle. I never took him back there with me again."
Holy cow.
Yeah.
What an awful story to go with it.
I know.
You just love how 3-year-olds can be so nonchalant. I'm talking to a ghost. She's telling me that her mother killed her and everybody else. And yeah, no big deal.
Next up is Chapel of the Cross in Madison, Mississippi. And this one was suggested by Chelsea Flowers.
Chapel of the Cross Cemetery is located at 674 Mansdale Road in Madison, Mississippi. This is attached to the church for which it is named. The Johnstone family came from North Carolina to Mississippi in the 1820s and bought land. John T. Johnstone bought 524 acres where the chapel sits today. There was a log cabin already on the property, and he enlarged it for his family and named it Annandale. That had been the name of his ancestral home in Scotland. The family had moved into the cabin in 1841, and just 7 years later, John was dead at the age of 47. His wife Margaret buried him in the flower garden of the log cabin home. John had wanted to build a church here, and Margaret went forward with that plan. She hired architect Frank Wills, and he designed a Gothic Revival church with a lofty bell tower, tall narrow windows, and arched entrances. The church was built from bricks made by slave labor from river bottom clay. The interior featured hand-hewn wood and pews, and chancel furnishings were imported through a furniture dealer in New Orleans. The baptismal font was cut from 3 pieces of imported Italian stone, and the pipe organ was shipped from Philadelphia. The original bell was melted down by Confederate forces to make bullets during the Civil War. The church has undergone extensive renovations and is home to an Episcopalian congregation. Located behind the church is the cemetery. And now a little break for a word about one of our sponsors.
In Puerto Rico, we call ourselves Boricua. We are proud, passionate, and full of life. On our island, adventure finds you. Strangers aren't strangers for long. The size of the audience doesn't change the beauty of the music. and we celebrate every last ray of sun. Live Boricua.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Rodney Mooney heads up the Wandering the Pines of Mississippi account on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube, and Chelsea shared this post in The Crew. The following is a true story most have never heard and likely won't find anywhere else, at least not in its entirety. Thank you, Leslie Miller, guide for Mont Helena in Rolling Fork, Mississippi, for introducing me to it. This story strengthened my resolve to record our Mississippi stories and share them for hopes of preserving our state's great history before it's lost. Let me just say the account's great. You need to check out all the stuff there, especially for Mississippi history. I have a lot of ideas of how I'm going to preserve these stories, and I'll share with you in the future, but in the meanwhile, brace yourselves for a small sample of one of the most beautiful stories I've ever heard. It's Christmas, 1855. 16-year-old Helen Johnstone is celebrating with family at her sister's house when there's a knock at the door. She answers it to find the very handsome Henry Vick from the same family that settled Vicksburg, so think of him as a Mississippi prince. And of course, Vicksburg was named for that family, obviously. Though we must then also see Helen as our Mississippi princess as well. Her family was very well off and established much of Mississippi as well. Her bloodlines went back to some major Scottish clan roots, and as you heard, the family named the property for that. As Helen answered the door, Henry explains that he was traveling from Nita, Yuma, when his wagon became stuck in the mud and a wheel spike had broken. While he was looking for help, he found more than he bargained for at that doorstep. It was love at first sight. Helen begged her parents for Henry to be allowed to stay until they fixed the wagon. A few days later, and before he could leave, Henry asked Helen's widowed mother for permission to marry her daughter. Helen's mother agreed, but only until she had time enough to build them a house, later to be named Annandale, once near present Madison, Mississippi, to later be known as the most beautiful gem in the South before it burned. She also did this to protect her daughter, to give them a longer engagement, being Helen was only 16. 2 years pass, the house is almost complete, so Henry and his friends accompany him to New Orleans so he can buy a suit for the wedding. It was to be the wedding of Mississippi royals, after all, and was to be a wedding for the ages. There are two stories as to what happens next. It is said that Henry had a run-in with someone over land. However, the following is the story that I feel is more accurate after further research. One of Vic's companions, in some accounts referred to as Mr. Stith, on the trip to New Orleans, became angered when he fell off his horse after trying to get on it. He blamed it on Henry's manservant not saddling it correctly. Stith said, "If Henry didn't beat the manservant himself, he'd do it himself." Henry protected his manservant, siding with him over his friend, angering the man further. After a heated conversation and needing to be separated, things seemed to have cooled down, or so Henry thought. They made it to New Orleans, bought the suit, and were celebrating at a bar when Stith, still angry, approached Henry. Stith demanded a duel with pistols. Henry then denied the request as Helen had explicitly requested that Henry never do such a thing before he left. She couldn't bear to lose the love of her life, nor the thought of him taking the life of another. However, at this refusal, Stith declared to all in the bar that by not agreeing to a duel, his entire family name, Vic, would be tarnished and he would no longer be known as a gentleman of honor. Would the city of Vicksburg have to change its name? For shame. Apparently, this threat was enough. Honor was held in much higher regard back then. Henry agreed to the duel, but dueling was illegal. They found a field hidden away all the way out in Mobile, Alabama, where they thought it was private to have the duel. Being the gentleman, after walking their 10 paces, Henry turned but fired a shot straight up into the air. After all, he promised Helen not to kill a man. Unfortunately, Stith did not miss, hitting Henry right between the eyes, killing him on the spot. As police were made aware of the duel and closing in, Henry's friends gathered the body, hid it in a box with coffee grounds to mask the smell, and sent it on a train with the caterers delivering food to the wedding, none all the wiser that the groom was dead in a box with them. Can you imagine doing that?
Terrible.
Henry's friends were unable to get word to Helen about her fiancé's death due to the illegality of the dueling and being pursued by police, so unawares, Helen and her mother were still decorating the newly built church, the Chapel of the Cross in Madison, for the wedding. Waiting for her fiancé to arrive, the joyous mood turned to despair as her husband's body arrived instead. Instead of a wedding, they had a burial on their wedding day. She wore her wedding gown and all with lanterns to light the way, buried Henry Vick in his new suit in the Johnstone family plot. It is said that Helen would not leave and stayed nearby, sitting on the cold iron bench, rain or shine, beside his grave, wailing, crying, and talking to him for months, until her mother took her away to visit family in Scotland. Years passed, Helen returned to Mississippi and married a reverend and soon had children. They all lived happily at Mount Helena in Rolling Fork, Mississippi, built atop an old ceremonial mound. She is said to have had a happy family life for the remainder of her years. However, perhaps Helen and Henry's love story did not end as many suspect. I was made privy to a new wrinkle to the story. Her husband, the Reverend, had passed, and Helen was on her deathbed at the top of Mount Helena. I was told that her mother was at her bedside when Helen looked up and smiled. With her last breaths, Helen said, "Mama, do you see him? It's Henry. I see him coming in his carriage to take me home." There are also other stories of sightings of Helen's ghost still haunting Henry's graveside, sitting on the same iron bench. Whether or not you believe they are reunited in the afterlife, no matter if her last words and present haunts are true, the love story between the bride of Annandale and Henry Vick was real. And I like to think that by remembering and retelling this tale, they are united again, their story preserved, and their love immortal. Quick note, when visiting Henry's grave at the Chapel of the Cross, I was in respectful silence and admiration when out of nowhere a ray of sunlight broke through the leaves and the trees, passed over Helen's bench, and illuminated the cross atop Henry's tombstone. It was brilliant.
I love that.
So what I did is I went and searched out Rodney Mooney and Wandering the Pines of Mississippi, and I saw, because I wanted to see the pictures. And so I was looking at the pictures. He has a gorgeous one of the church, and then there's this picture with the sunlight. So I asked Rodney if it'd be okay if I would share those pictures of his. So we're going to put those up on Instagram so you guys can see those. See what you think. Did the sunlight just happen to come through by coincidence, or was Henry giving him a little wink and a nod, maybe Helen as well?
Yeah.
What a great story, though. I love it.
I do, too.
Next, we have Just Us Cemetery. And that's exactly how it's spelled. J-U-S-T-U-S. But it's all one word. But I love that for a cemetery. It's just us dead people in here.
That's a good name. Justice Cemetery is located at 805 South Howard Street in Oxford, Indiana. There are around 1,200 burials here. Burials have taken place since 1808, but the cemetery wasn't officially established until 1840. The first burial after that was for James McConnell on March 11, 1840. One of the burials here is connected to a tragic story. Two 13-year-old boys named Marvin Mounts and Carol Albertson were buried here after they drowned trying to save the younger sister of Marvin, Colleen. It seems Colleen was wading in the shallow water when she stepped off into a deep hole. The boys were fishing and came running when they heard Marvin and Colleen's mother screaming. Neither boy could swim, but Marvin jumped in while Carol grabbed a pole for Marvin to grab onto. Carol slipped into the hole trying to rescue Marvin. Both boys went under and never surfaced. But Colleen bobbed to the surface and was pulled out by some people who had come running to the scene, and she was revived and saved. Marvin and Carol were recovered a little later, and their funeral was held at Carol's house. Carol was buried at Justice, and Marvin was buried at Boswell Cemetery in Boswell, Indiana.
The ghost story here has nothing to do with the boys, however. This story begins with the water tower in Oxford. The night was cold and blustery, and the train was making its way along the Chicago and Eastern Illinois Railroad. It made its normal stop at the water tower to take on water. Crew members were trying to stay warm as they did their work when they suddenly heard a deep, echoing moan rising from the tower. But it wasn't just the crew that heard the noise. The passengers did as well. As the noise continued, a glowing white figure appeared and drifted towards the train. The crew members stood frozen to their spots, and none of the passengers dared to breathe. And then a passenger screamed, followed by another passenger screaming. This woke the crew out of their stupor, and they quickly packed in their stuff, but before they could leave, they watched as the spirit made its way to Justice Cemetery and disappeared into a grave. A few nights later, the train experienced another strange thing. It had stopped for water at the tower again. The crew finished up without any issues, but as the train tried to pull away, the wheels just spun around and the train went nowhere. The train seemed to be held back by something. The panicked crew felt the train break free and it lurched forward. They decided to not stop at the Oxford Water Tower ever again.
Very interesting.
Now, I did hear as a quote-unquote epilogue to this story that a detective came out and found that it was some teenage boys that had rigged up a sheet or something and wire, and it made that look like a ghost, and then they put soap on the tracks, and that caused the train to do what it did.
Okay.
Let me just say, I think, despite this being years ago, if you saw a sheet floating through the air,
you would know
you
it's
would
a
kind
sheet
of
floating
know.
Through the air.
I mean, especially to scare these people like this. And while I imagine putting some soap on train tracks might cause a little bit of trouble, this is a huge train.
Right.
Soap is not, I'm sorry. I was like, okay, you can explain it however you want to, but soap does not keep a train from moving forward like that. Maybe it would like skid a little bit. Or I don't even think that would cause the problem, because trains can like go over pennies and just flatten them. It doesn't like make them go off the tracks and stuff. So I don't know if that really was an explanation for it. I think there was something strange going on here. Next, we have Evergreen Cemetery in Colorado Springs.
Evergreen Cemetery is located at 1005 South Hancock Avenue in Colorado Springs, Colorado. It was established in 1871 and covers 220 acres. This was 2 miles from the town and founded initially under the name Mountain Home Cemetery by Colorado Springs founder General William Jackson Palmer. The name was changed to Evergreen in 1877. This has been city-owned and operated since 1875 and was placed on the National Register of Historic Places in 1993. A small chapel in the cemetery was built in 1910, and the basement vault could hold up to 30 bodies during the winter when the ground was frozen. A special mechanism would lift the caskets up. Burials continue still, and there are over 100,000 currently. Notable burials include pioneers of Colorado Springs, including Palmer, mine owners, astronaut Dale Gardner, and Roy Rogers' comical sidekick, Pat Brady. Stephanie Westerfeld was an American figure skater who was flying to the World Championships in Prague in 1961 aboard Sabena Flight 548 when it crashed. Her sister Sharon was also on the plane, and both were killed. Stephanie was 17 and Sharon was 25, and they're buried next to each other in Evergreen.
That mechanism is so cool that goes down into the vault. It's like there's a hole in the floor of the church and it has railings around it. And you're like, why is there a hole in the floor? And then you look down and it's just the shaft. And so it's kind of like a casket elevator. The chapel seems to be the scene of most of the haunting activity. Strange, unexplained noises have been reported and dark figures have been seen inside near the casket lifting device. A woman was visiting when she reported feeling a cold blast go through her as she was going down the stairs of the chapel. She felt extremely uncomfortable. Another woman experienced the same thing and said the cold blast felt negative. In April of 2011, Biography Channel's My Ghost Story ran an episode with a segment called Tale of a Crypt that featured Evergreen Cemetery. Will DeBoer worked as the cemetery manager for 19 years and he hosted walking tours where he would take people inside the chapel. Michael Coletta was another tour guide. They both appeared on the show. Michael said he had a group out in the cemetery at night when they saw a figure fly through the cemetery. The figure was described as moving cat-like and was 5 feet in length. Maybe a mountain lion was out there?
Yeah, that's where my head went.
Michael's used a K2 meter in the crypt and gotten readings. The crypts each have 100-year-old wooden doors that are very heavy, and the insides have slate shelves. That's what they would put the bodies on top of. And they actually would put these big metal balls on top of their abdomens to kind of keep them from bloating.
Yeah.
Michael was videotaping down there when his skin started crawling and he turned around and caught on tape one of the doors opening on its own. Wind couldn't move the door. Michael circled the door to show that there were no wires or anything. He backed away from the crypt and door, and the door started to close very slowly. I watched this on video, and of course, this was back in 2011 before they did Paranormal Caught on videotape, so I don't know if they've also gotten this video over to that show, but I was like, whoa, no doubt about it. Something is opening that door.
Very cool.
And he was just as shocked and excited. So you could see him going, wait, what's happening here? And then you could see him going, wow, this just opened on it. I mean, it was like you and I reacted like, wow, this door just opened on its own. And then he was like trying to debunk it. So it was very cool. He called a local radio station and showed them the video and invited them to help him try to debunk it. They tried pushing on the doors to make them swing open, and they needed a lot of force to do that. So there's definitely something going on here. Will DeBoer was a skeptic, and when he watched the video, he says to this day, he would still try to see if he could somehow make that door do it, because he just was like, I don't believe this or whatever, you know, that really happened. But he's like, I can't explain it. Kelly, we always have synchronicity come up with this podcast.
Yep.
This one is crazy. So I'm watching the My Ghost Story episode, and so it goes into the second segment, and I thought, I'll go ahead and watch it, why not, about a haunted house that's in Fort Scott, Kansas. This is a crazy haunting where a man hacked up his wife in the basement and another man shot himself with a shotgun on the porch.
Yeesh.
Couple that lived there did not know that until they started having all this strange stuff going on. They shared their experiences where they saw an apparition. They heard disembodied voices talking to their young daughters at night when they slept, and they had investigators come in and they caught activity in the basement, which included a shadow figure on video that gave me chills.
Oh, wow.
Again, I'm watching something going, I don't know what created that, but it was one of those, it wasn't a really thick shadow figure, but there was enough fluctuation in the camera, and you could see that the camera was trying to focus on whatever was going through, so it gave me chills. This segment ends with the wife, because at the end it would like do a follow-up of what happened afterward. It ended with the wife and their three children moving out and leaving the husband to deal with the stuff. Well, this is not good enough for me. This is like back in 2011. I wanted to know more. So I'm like sitting there going, oh my gosh. So she just picks up the kids and leaves the guy to have to hang out in this haunted place. Did they like try to sell the house? Are they still together? Did she leave him? I Googled the husband's name, and one of the first things that came up was this thing from 2020, and the couple must still be together as their names appeared together in an obituary for the husband's father. So it was his father's obituary, and I'm like, okay, well, where is he in there? And then I saw that it was his name and her still together. And then I see that there was this second link that was underneath that one that came up on Google. So I went ahead and just clicked on that one. And this was on Facebook for a man who had the same name as the husband. Was not the husband, much younger guy. And it said that he lives at Fort Riley, Kansas. What episode did we drop last week, Kelly?
Fort Riley.
So I was like, okay, what's the message I'm supposed to get? This is what happens to me all the time. I'm just like, I wonder about and look at different things. And then I click on this guy's name and I'm like, well, that can't be him. He's a young guy. And then it was like, lives at Fort Riley, Kansas. And I went, are you kidding me?
Too funny.
Yeah.
Grace Robertson wrote on Quora 5 years ago, we were driving back and we would pass this little old Catholic cemetery. It was very neat looking, meaning that people would come out and take care of the graves. This was in Poteet. It is dry and dusty. Red sand, just dusty. When we would drive by this cemetery, there would be little lights on the graves. On top of the headstones, just everywhere. All different color lights. These lights were not lightning bugs. There were pink, red, yellow, green, blue little lights.
Makes me think like fairies or something.
Yeah. There was no marsh or water. The sunlight was not dancing off the headstones and grounds. Some of these headstones were old wooden crosses and dull white ones. This one was closer to us. If we were to take the long way to the cemetery, it would be a half mile. There was a lot of strange goings on there. We would have to drive past that cemetery to get to our home. We would see shadows there walking about. There would be fog that surrounded the cemetery, and it would look like a gate of fog. Everything else would be clear, very clear, but that fog would surround the small cemetery. Again, you would see corpse lights.
I love that name. I don't know if she came up with it or if that's a legend kind of thing.
Will of the Wisp just hovering there. If they were lightning bugs, they wouldn't just stay in one spot. Sometimes, when you would drive home late at night, there would be a shadow darting across the road. There were plenty of accidents because of the shadows.
So that was one graveyard near them. Very well taken care of. There was this other graveyard that was overrun with weeds. There was trash, and couples would go there to have their alone time. This little cemetery was being so disrespected that we decided to adopt a piece of the graveyard and maybe inspire someone to take care of it. There was a lot of graves that were very old. My daughter and I picked a grave and we started pulling weeds and trying to clear a spot to put a vase of flowers that we got at our local HEB. We were talking, bonding, and just having a pleasant time. All of a sudden, we heard footsteps. We didn't pay it any mind. We weren't doing anything wrong. When all of a sudden, we noticed that we couldn't hear anything. No cars whizzing by, no birds or insects, nothing. It was as if we were in a dome. The air pressure got heavy, but we could still hear those footsteps. I felt something between my daughter and me. It was cold. My daughter was about to say something, but I shushed her. I handed her my car keys, and she knew what she was supposed to do. When she got in, I turned to where I felt the cold spot and said that I understand that you wanted to see what we were doing. We meant no disrespect. We're leaving now, and you are to stay here and not follow us nor bother us. I then slowly and deliberately began walking to my car. I took a bottle of cold water and put some on the back of my neck and then tossed some water behind my shoulders, and my daughter did the same. I don't know if that's a way to keep something from following you.
I guess. I don't know. I've not heard that before.
But yeah, so it was probably just somebody coming over. Maybe it was their grave you were tending to, and they were like, what are you doing with my grave there? And so I'm sorry that they got scared and took off.
Yeah.
Hopefully they went back and took some more care of that cemetery.
Cemeteries are so beautiful and peaceful. Many of these provide a wonderful place to enjoy a picnic with family, even the deceased members. Some of these cemeteries have weird things occurring. Are these cemeteries haunted?
That is for you to decide. Cool places to check out. Let us know if you hear about any hauntings in any of your local cemeteries. We'd love to have you check out our website at historyghostbump.com. And if you'd like to send us some feedback, you can do that at historyghostbump@gmail.com. Want to thank you guys for tuning in to this episode. I've been your host, Diane.
And this has been Kelly.
You take care now.
Bye-bye.
This episode is brought to you by our executive producers.
You can find History Goes Bump on Spotify, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Pandora, Google Play, and anywhere you can listen to podcasts.
Although the yeoman warders who currently guard the castle are not sure of the hand's origin or purpose, the sight of a disembodied hand encased in the wall of a medieval castle certainly is odd.
Ooh, I have an idea for our door now. It'd make a lot of those unwanted people who come to your door go away if they had to put their hand in the wall and then bam.
No solicitation.
Or you lose a hand. Disembodied whispers are heard, especially near the graves of Civil War soldiers.
Disembodied whips?
Is that what I ended up saying at the beginning?
Initially, I think. It sounded like it.
Disembodied whips. I'm sure there is such a thing, you know.
Whip good.
Well, I
Get
would.
Straight.
Well, I.
Go forward.
Now she's
Move
singing.
Move ahead.
That's much better than what I was thinking disembodied whip sounds could be for.
This features an onion dome cupola. And designs near the roof featuring horseshoe shapes, a four-loaf clover. Great. Notable burials include
panniers. Are they just some panniers?
Set me outside the head and call me mama.
A woman was visiting when she reported feeling a cold blast grow through her.
Grow
it just
through
grew
her.
Right through her.
Woohoo!
That'd be awful. Have a cold blast grow through you, although
you're cold all the time, though.
Well, you know, ladies, those of you who are going through menopause, don't you get really cold right before you have a unbearable hot flash?
Yes.
So it's like you're freezing, and then it's like, oh, thank God. Although I know most women aren't like, oh, thank God. I don't mind hot flashes.
You're just weird.
I am weird.